how it's going to go. What in East Dallas is going on?
I'm Camille.
And I'm Rich.
Hey, Rich, today we have a new East Dallas resident, I guess I'll say, Dr. David Darrigan.
Yes. Okay, so if you had an emergency, we know how important the doctors are.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, and we have one right here in the studio.
And we're going to ask him a lot of questions.
Yeah, we're going to be pegging you with questions. I hope you know that.
All right, bring it on.
Yeah. But he is the new ER doctor at White Rock Hospital.
Yes.
Here in the heart of East Dallas.
Yeah, so everyone, you pass it all the time. It's right there off of
Buckner.
Yeah, Buckner, right
Garland
over there.
Road,
kind
right
of across from you.
Across from me, right there by the lake.
Yeah, right there by the lake.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful hospital, been around for a long time, actually.
Yes, it was originally, a lot of people know it as Doctors Hospital.
That's
it was
right.
Doctors for years.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's changed names and a new ownership group, and they're bringing in some all-stars like yourself.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Do we call you David or Doctor?
That's fine. Okay. I go by anything. I always say I'm only a doctor at work. But you know, David, Dr. Darrigan, Dr. Dave, anything you want.
Dude, that is awesome.
There you go. Double D.
Double D, triple D if you found the doctor in there.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Now, I was reading some stuff recently, not like 3 months ago, I think, about some doctors. And they were saying the most experienced doctors, sometimes if they've been practicing for 30 or 40 years, may not actually be your best bet for getting well. Okay, just what do you think?
Sure.
I mean, seriously,
I know
before
what
we get
talking
in,
about.
Look, before we get into all the stuff, I just had to ask.
Yeah, it's actually a really good question. So, you know, medicine is changing every day,
right.
And the theory behind that is the docs who have been around a long, long time might be kind of set in their ways, and not really up to date with the changes. It honestly is more specialty specific. So there's some things that aren't changing a lot. Family medicine, you know, internal medicine, orthopedics. If you break a bone, there's, you know, it's the same broken bone. There might be some new different treatments available, but the medicine behind it is the same. In emergency medicine, we have to stay up to date. We have pretty much the most rigorous qualifying to get reboarded every couple of years. We're having to pass new licensing exams because it's so changing, you know, rapidly. So, you know, for an ER doc or even any doc, I think right in the middle is probably a good, you know, good point in their career.
Okay.
There's some specialists that, you know, you want that have been doing it, you know, for 40 years. I'd love to have a general surgeon if I need my gallbladder or appendix or something out who's done that thousands and thousands of times versus a new guy. I'm, you know, right in the middle of my career. I'm at 16 years. And
how old are you, if you don't mind?
I'm 41. Yeah. So I started young.
We're the same age. Well, I'm 43 now. Oh my God, I'm 43.
Wow. I'm not saying how old I am.
You're fine. Young lady over there. Okay. So I love that answer because it's like, it makes perfect sense actually now when you think about
sense.
It. Okay. What about when the AI stuff starts entering the hospitals?
Yeah.
Now, I literally, Camille, you know, I love podcasts.
Yes.
I have two podcasts,
yes,
but I do love listening to podcasts too, right? And I was listening to one this morning and they were talking about how they feel like coming very soon that doctors will be relying on AI for either diagnosis and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what are your thoughts about that?
That's hard. I think it's going to depend on the money. You know,
you
follow the money is where this stuff usually becomes, you know, relevant.
Right.
I think if it can make systems profitable, there'll be ways that we are forced to rely on it. But, you know, I think there was something I saw recently where they put one of the AI through some medical scenarios to see how they did, and they did not pass. So I was very happy about that. That they were probably
so
won't be replaced
doctor.
Right
Don't
away.
Don't be the guinea pigs on the AI.
Yeah. So, Dr. David, how many AI systems are you using?
But, you know, there's a place for it. I mean, honestly, right now, most of what we do is based on technology anyways.
Right.
So we have to adapt with that. If you ever watch the TV show ER back in the '90s, you know, the docs were shouting out what they were, you know, needing CBC, CMP stat, you know, now it's, I always joke that if we had an ER show now, it'd be boring because you'd be watching a doctor behind the computer. You know, they're typing in everything, reviewing everything over the computer. Like, we're at the computer station a vast majority of our time. Wow. So we're already there, I think. It's just going to be, how can that help things more efficiently?
And I think, look, if you're using it as a crutch, it's probably not a good idea. But for if you're using it as a co-pilot to help kind of guide you in a certain direction, mm-hmm. I do think it'll be okay. Now, obviously, AI is the exponential growth on it. It's just insanely crazy. So I imagine in the medical field, it'll probably continue that way.
I think so. And it was weird. I mean, it just happened overnight. It felt like there was nothing. Goodness. And then there's ChatGPT and there's all these different programs. Like, who developed this all at the same time, different programs? And it's I've used it for some recommendation letters.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
I know. It makes it so much easier, right, when you have to write something.
There's definitely a place for it, but it's scary.
I ain't going to say I use it like 10, a dozen times a day, but 10 times a day would seem pretty accurate.
Wow. Yeah, I use it almost daily.
Do you really? Okay, so what drew you to emergency medicine? Because that's tough. I mean, I see my cousin, just so you know, she was an ER doctor. I think she went to, she went into hospice now. So she does nursing in hospice, up in Seattle. Hmm. But she loved the rush of the ER.
Yeah.
Is that like innate?
I think it is. We're all, how do I say it? So in medicine, when you're in medical school, the first 2 years is just books and study.
Where'd you go?
UNT Health Science Center in Fort Worth. Okay. And then I did my residency at Parkland. Yeah.
Great school.
You know, and you can kind of see the personalities, how different personalities fit into different specialties early on. Mm. So I generally tell young medical students, like, pick the specialty that matches your personality because they're all so very different. First 2 years is all books and it doesn't really guide us in that direction. Then you're thrown into the hospitals and you've got to choose quickly what you're going to spend the rest of your life doing. So for me, it was a mix of what you just spoke about and my personality. I get bored easily. I like results right away. I want to know a little bit about everything. And I do well under pressure. And those are the things you really look for in an emergency medicine and trauma physician is, you know, can you multitask and how do you do under pressure, critical thinking?
Yeah.
People ask all the time, how did I know or when did I know I wanted to be a doctor? And I can't pinpoint it, but I know I always wanted to. And I thought I wanted to be a cardiologist and till I got into medical school and started really learning the differences. But I will say that that TV show helped drive me a lot. I mean, I loved watching it. I remember in junior high, I ordered the book. It was, you know, because I wanted to know what they were talking about when they were making those orders, like CBC, CMP stats.
So what is this?
It was like a little book from the TV show that had like the definitions of what they were saying. And I was following that as a kid. And once I did my first rotation there, I never looked back.
Really?
Yeah.
My buddy Steve, he's a heart doctor. In Steve Modal. Mm-hmm. He's a heart doctor up in, I think he's in Denton in Grapevine area.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He loves it though.
That's what we need. We need the guys that still love their job.
Well, okay. So for me, like, and I'm sure for you too, having a doctor with good bedside manner, like you're very engaging, you know, and we just met.
Right.
I mean, downstairs, we're chit-chatting just a little bit, but you're a very personal guy. Like, I feel like I can talk to you.
Yeah.
And how important is that in emergency medicine?
It's very important in emergency medicine. It's very important in all aspects of medicine. It's not something that we're trained on, honestly. And I think we should, there's so many things I would revamp in medical school and training if I could. But, you know, one is that personability aspect. There's a lot of doctors out there that have that God complex or, you know, better than you type complex based on their training, you know, how people treat doctors. And I've just always been, you know, humble, grew up, you know, very humble beginnings, grew up very poor and have just,
Where'd you grow up?
In Lubbock, Texas.
Okay.
And so I've always just kept that as we're all equals, you know, we might do different things, but we need all of us to be able to move on in this world, to make society work and the same thing in medicine. So, you know, there's so much now that in medicine that's customer satisfaction driven that we're not trained on. And, you know, part of my job as not just a doctor in emergency medicine, but a leader as I kind of run the groups is teaching docs that you know the patients aren't just your patients, they're your customers. And, you know, if we want customers to return, just like any business, we want them to have a good experience.
Wow.
So we have to treat them different than just, you know, that they're a disease and we're, you know, the medical vehicle. It's,
yeah.
it's more the person to person relationship. And honestly, that's what White Rock's been missing, I think, in the ER for a little bit. And that's what we're striving to bring back, not just to the ER, but to the entire hospital.
Well, I mean, I think not having that bedside manner, and I say this because I'm experiencing this and getting ready to switch doctors. Like, a doctor can be an amazing doctor.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that bedside manner, I mean, you're not connecting yeah. with the patients. And it doesn't matter how great you are, if you're not connecting with them, I mean, maybe you should be doing research, right?
Yeah.
Instead of
right.
having patients.
Yeah, because honestly, how many times are you going to go into ER? Once every few years, you hope, or something? So they're
scared.
I
mean, even with a regular doctor.
Yeah, or even with a regular, you're right.
Yeah.
But it's like the people will go into a situation like yours. They're scared. They don't yeah. know what's going on. They think that they're dying because they looked it up on WMD, yeah. which we're going to get to. I got to ask them about that too. But, you know, so, and that to me is like kind of rule number one, to yeah. be honest with you. Like, yeah. why can't you just act like you care?
Yeah. Sure. And I'm so glad, like, I love your energy and stuff that you're bringing into White Rock Medical
yes.
because,
oh
like
gosh.
You said,
it's refreshing.
And not it, when it was doctors, it was there forever. It was probably a little stale,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of older people went there because they had grown up there, but it just felt like it got so stale. And now it is rebranding, but I think they still have a ways to go.
Yeah. There is a ways to go in a lot of aspects. You know, we're in the middle of Dallas, so there's no shortage of hospitals. And,
right.
And that
right.
goes also to the customer experience thing we're speaking about is patients and people have a choice of where they go. And they're going to make those choices based on human experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, right now the hospital isn't as, you know, pretty as some, you know, different hospitals around. But I feel like if we treat people well enough, that will supersede, you know, having all the bells and whistles.
Right.
And then someday we'll be able to get the bells and whistles back there after we've, you know, accomplished our mission and kind of rebranded and brought the population back there. It's interesting you said that. One of the new docs that I've brought on to White Rock, his name is Dr. Matthew Brooker, a Dallas resident. And he says it best. He says it's about treating people like people. You know, just
yeah.
remembering that we're all people and
right.
treating them like we're equals and you know, treating them like people. And if we do that instead of I'm a doctor, you're a patient,
right.
Then I think it changes the experience and culture.
Yeah. Now you compete with not only the other hospitals, but you compete with ER clinics,
yeah.
doc in the box.
Yeah.
I mean, all
by the way,
so
we're going to get to the doc in the box here in just a second. The convenience doc in the box, you know, and look, there's nothing wrong with them.
No.
But we do I have some questions. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, but in all seriousness, yeah. we have some questions about yeah. it because I think as patients, you have a right to know, period. Like,
yeah.
what's the difference?
Sure.
Like,
yeah, what the difference is, right? Because you don't know. Like,
absolutely.
I don't know. I mean,
I'm still confused on how hospitals even make. I know how they make money, but how come some hospitals go broke? Like, how can you possibly go broke as
sure.
a hospital?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't get that.
Yeah. It's a long explanation, but it's an interesting topic, especially it's business. You know, it's people tend to forget that medicine is a business.
Yeah.
And if you look at what the health insurance companies pull in and their strategies in denying care to their customers – and how that all ties into what makes a hospital, you don't see hospitals in North Plano going out of business. Okay.
No, right.
You see hospitals in less affluent areas that aren't
sure.
being taken care of going out of business if they're not getting the right governmental funding. So it's the same as any other business. It's all about the clientele and the contracts that you make, and it can really make a business or a hospital.
Yeah.
You know, for you, you don't seem like the type of doctor that would say, if someone says they come in there with an emergency, they may not have insurance. Mm-hmm. You don't seem like the type of doctor that would just turn them away.
No, that's the main reason actually I went into emergency medicine. So in medical school, we get no business training. So we all know that we're getting paid based on insurances and but we get no training on how to run an office, how to contract with an insurance company, all these type of important things. And that's why doctors end up working for companies that end up maybe not making the best decisions for the patient. So I think if we got more business training in medical school, we could circumvent that. But that's besides the point. So for ER, the main reason I went into it is because I never wanted to make a care decision based on if the patient had insurance or not. I wanted to be able to treat them for whatever their emergent need was, regardless of having to ask them or take their insurance. Right. And, you know, that's the beauty of emergency medicine, is that we take care of everybody. That doesn't mean that the ER needs to turn into the free clinic where you go for your sore throats or an ingrown toenail.
Right.
That's kind of the effect that sometimes can happen when you don't have to have insurance. So there's ways we manage that. Mm-hmm. But that's the driving force, is, you know, getting people the care they need, regardless of their ability to pay. The problem is when you have somebody that comes in with, and you diagnose them with a cancer, you know, or something that's really bad, and they don't have insurance. I can help them right then, but in the back of my head right away, I'm thinking, where can I get them that can help them with funding long term? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's the saddest thing, is to see somebody, you know, that you can help, but their next day, what they need long term, they're not going to be able to afford. That's where it gets tough. Man. Thankfully, we're in Dallas where we have resources, but
yeah.
I've been places where, you know, where you don't, different cities. I've managed ERs all over the country for a long time. So I've got experience in, you know, tiny places up to level one trauma centers. And there's some places where they don't have the resources based on where you live. If, you know, if you have an East Texas hospital and you live 60 minutes from the hospital and you don't have insurance and you develop lung cancer, you're in a much different position than if you're in the middle of Dallas where you can get to UT Southwestern or Portland.
Right.
Yeah. And so you work for the hospital.
So
a
little
different. Are you contracted in? Because some ER doctors are contracted in.
Most, actually. Yeah. So there's something in Texas called the Corporate Practice of Medicine Act, where they don't want physicians working as employees of the hospital.
Oh, that's right.
It's to keep decisions fair.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want.
What do you mean?
You don't want a hospital system to tell a physician how to practice, because that could lead to, the theory is it could lead to, you know, not the right choices, maybe over ordering, over charging.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So the standard practice is to contract with a physician group and have a partnership. So that way we remain independent of hospital financial decision-making, but we are able to provide those services. So I like to explain it like a restaurant. A restaurant, you know, might have Coke or Pepsi. Uh-huh. It's that restaurant who contracts with Coke. They decide, I'm going to contract with Coke, contract with Pepsi. They contract with physician groups to provide the physician services. So that's how I ended up here. I've always been a part of groups and been kind of like, I've been a chief medical officer or vice president of groups. I've never had my own. And that was my goal, was to start my own group, and was awarded, thankfully, the one at White Rock where I could start, you know, have my own group. And so we contract with the hospital to provide the emergency services. And so that's why, you know, I'm here in White Rock and here on the podcast to kind of let everybody know that, you know, although it's the same physical building, the experience is meant to be different coming up. And not just experience, but the physicians, even the physicians that are there that are staying, we have some great ones. And, you know, with a little bit of coaching or bringing in a new culture or system, it's going to affect, you know, how patients are treated, the care given, and hopefully the reputation.
Wow. You know, just so you know, Camille and I, so you're not being paid to be on, or you're not paying us.
No.
And because, so we're interested in health.
Yeah.
Like we have something coming up for everybody here real soon, because Camille and I, we try to eat right and we try to do all the right, you know, things to stay healthy for as long as we can.
Yeah.
So health is a big part of our deal. It's just, that's just pure irony that we're both kind of like that.
Right.
That's why you're here. So thank you for doing this, by the way.
You look in great shape too, by the way. Well, for 40s,
man, I don't feel like, every time I walk up those stairs, I'm out of breath. I get worried. Okay. I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break and Camille, I know we're going to go into the doc in a box thing and all that stuff, but I do want to ask him about any patients or anything that stands out, because I don't know that the curiosity part of me.
Yeah.
It's like
fun questions. Yeah. We'll ask him some fun questions.
Yeah.
About that.
Like when that bone was sticking out of that person. What'd you do? Okay. So we will be right back.
Sounds good.
All right. Cool.
Can Camille, when you have a medical emergency, you really want to get somewhere fast.
Yes, time is of the essence, and you want to make sure you're in good hands.
Lucky for us, right here in East Dallas, we have the convenience of White Rock Medical Center.
With a full-service emergency room led by Dr. David Derrigan.
And they're open 24 hours a day and easily accessible right off of Buckner Boulevard.
Yes, at 9440 Poppy Drive.
If you want more information about White Rock Medical Center, go to whiterockmedicalcenter.com. That's whiterockmedicalcenter.com. Gosh, that's so funny. That I mean, I just cannot even. Camille, just normalize your life.
This is why I would not be an ER doctor.
Yeah, this is exactly
Let me
why.
Just say that.
But like I just said, you know, yeah, I think, you know, don't be embarrassed. Just know that he has seen everything.
Yeah.
You know, and your health comes
Get
first.
Help.
Okay, so when it comes to looking stuff on the internet and a patient comes in and says, I saw this on WMD or whatever, one of the many millions of sites. What do you tell them?
Yeah, that's, you know, that really depends on what they're bringing to you. You know, there's some things where I try to teach my docs, like, you may know what they're bringing to you. They don't have that. But in nowadays, you know, just you with your degree and your scrubs on, somebody you just met saying, no, you don't have that. Trust me, you're fine. That doesn't really work. You know,
yeah.
You know, first I try to teach them, educate. This is why I don't think you have, you know, this concern. If you really want to know for sure, we can do this test and then maybe tell them what could happen from that test. You know, it's a lot of radiation, or it's, you know, could hurt your kidneys, or it could be really expensive or time consuming. That's called joint decision making. So I'll say, we'll go up for, like, let's say, a very common scenario is a kid that hit its head. And, you know, parents are worried and they want to get a CAT scan because they're afraid of a concussion. Well, you know, CAT scans don't show concussions. It's kind of a misnomer. CAT scans show bleeding in the brain, swelling, things like that, a broken skull. But they want to feel reassured. So I explained to them, it's a lot of radiation for a little one. They didn't lose consciousness. They're not vomiting. You know, the height was, you know, X, and try to help them make a decision on if they should get that CAT scan. And a lot of times the patients still say, you know, no, I want to get it because it'll make me feel better. Dr. A might just say, no, I'm not doing it. It's not needed. You're discharged. And that's not good. You know, that patient's just going to have a bad experience, go to another ER where they're going to do it and feel reassured. So I think the trick is to educate them and make that decision jointly. If they accept the risk and they understand, then, you know, let's just do the test to help them feel better. But if it's something completely off the wall, you know, that's where it's a little bit harder. You know, there's some tests, you know, that I have to explain, like, I'm not going to get back, you know, your cortisol level from the ER, you know, you might be afraid of this, but it's going to, you know, I can do other tests to try to point you in the right direction, but this is going to have to be done as an outpatient. So it really depends on what the issue is. Is it going to cause harm? Can we make that decision together?
Gosh, this has got to be, tough, right? Because sometimes the patient could be right.
Yeah.
Or just,
that's happened.
Like, they kind of know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
they know themselves. Is it a little bit personal here? Is it tough when you lose a patient?
It is. You know, you learn early on how to internalize sometimes, because the big thing about the ER is, you know, we have to go see another patient right after that. We still have a department full of people.
Yeah.
And,
gosh,
you know, you kind of have to internalize it and move on and try to figure out how to cope with it later. The hardest part for me is when it's kids.
I couldn't do kids.
Yeah, that's the saddest. But, you know, story after story of, we'll have the whole team in the resuscitation room and, you know, trying to save, you know, whether it be young or old, but, you know, you might spend 30, 40 minutes doing all these life-saving measures and everybody's involved, and you walk out after you've pronounced the person, you know, deceased, unfortunately. And you have some patients that are sticking their head out mad because they haven't been updated on their sore throat or their ankle x-ray. And they see the sweat and the tears, and, you know, some just don't care. So that's really the hard part is, you know, is maintaining that composure, taking care of everybody else and learning how to cope so you don't become jaded.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, because that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't imagine doing it. And then, like you said, you got to gear back up because you have three other people.
Yeah.
To look after. Another 6 hours in that shift, right?
Yeah. Right. The first time I was lucky to have some good mentors. The first time was a physician he's now unfortunately passed away, but it was in medical school. It was a guy in a motorcycle who got hit head on by a semi truck, and he, you know, flew through a car window. It was a long resuscitation. He was young. My first time to see it. And I was, you know, really shaken up and didn't know what to do after. And my attending, you know, then he said, he was like, you know, he didn't have to make me do this.
The attending physician?
The doctor I was working under as a student.
Okay, got it.
He immediately made me go see more patients. And not because they needed to be seen, but he was trying to teach me then, like, you have to learn how to, you know, pivot and maintain your composure. Because I was like, what? Go see, we just went through this horrible experience and this young guy died. And he was like, you have to remember the patient is the one with the disease. They need you to be a doctor now. And you got to go see the next patient. And we'll talk about, you know, talk about what happened later. And so that was the first time, you know, I had experienced it and having to, you know, change the mindset, change gears and go take care of the rest of the people after going through that traumatic experience. Yeah.
Wow.
I think it makes you appreciate your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It makes you, you know, be thankful and grateful.
Yeah.
You know, I know I think about my death every day almost. Wow. I mean, seriously, but it makes me appreciate why I'm here now, you know. The patient don't know they're dead.
Yeah.
It's like stupid people don't know they're stupid, right? Is that a good correlation?
Maybe.
Okay. Now,
delete that.
No, leave that in, Hayes. Hayes is not here with us.
So are you enjoying being here in the East Dallas and with the White Rock Hospital?
I really, really am. It's, you know, I feel pretty at home. You know, I've been in every kind of ER there is and, you know, there's something special that can be done at this hospital. You know, not every hospital has to be Baylor Dallas where you offer every service, you know, underneath. But to have a community hospital where people are, you know, live in the neighborhood and we can take care of their needs, you know, pretty, you know, 85% of what anyone would ever need, you know, we can do. And, you know, we have some docs that can walk to the hospital from where they live.
That's
and,
cool.
You know, I haven't really experienced that. I've been on hospitals that are been off highways or, you know, big trauma centers where you're only getting ambulances. And to have this kind of community feel has been really, really good. And especially having the doctors that live in the area to be working there. And, you know, they might call me and say, my neighbor's son cut his leg. Can you make room for him and see him? That's what's going to make this special. And, you know, we've got to reengage the community to gain their trust, to make us their, you know, their one-stop shop. I feel like
the go-to.
Yeah.
There's something really special about East Dallas, the culture, you know, we talk about it. It's a reoccurring theme on every show, to be honest with you, David, because the community itself is very strong and tight knit. But it's also culturally diverse and everyone accepts everybody. And it's a very progressive place to be.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of nice that you're bringing in this new energy, this new vibe to be a part of it and want to say yes. Like, you know, come on, we get it. We understand. We're part of the community too.
Yeah. You know, and this community is great about embracing people that come into it and so forth. So yeah, I think it'll be great. I mean, they will welcome it because like it's right here in their backyard, right?
Yeah, and you want to support, you know, things that are right here in your backyard.
It's easy to park. You know, you go to a big hospital and you have no clue which building to park at.
Oh, my gosh, I get lost.
It's a far way. You might be paying for parking.
I'm lost just thinking about it.
You go in and you're welcomed. You know, it's there's something to say for that small community feel.
Yeah.
What's really impressed me is some of the employees that have been there 30 years. I mean, people, there are people that are dedicated to that place. And that's been special. And, you know, that motivates me, too, to really want to help. You know, rebrand is to make it a, you know, place everybody's proud of that's been there for so long.
Yeah.
Sure. They're dedicated.
Man, that's really cool. I love that. And even change their perspective a little bit, right? Like to help them get a new, you know, fresh eyes on it, you know, because sometimes if you're buried in the four walls that you do work in every day, you don't get to see the outside of the box.
Right.
So it's nice for you to come in.
I mean, there for a while when doctors was going away, I mean, everyone was worried it's going to set empty, right?
Yeah.
I mean, terrible. So
horrible.
I'm so glad that hasn't happened and that change is happening. And I do think that could be a great little neighborhood, not 100% boutique because, you know, the neighborhood's not, we're not snooty. That's not what we are. And we have all walks of life here, but a great little neighborhood hospital.
No, we brought that word up a lot, boutique or concierge. Like, that's kind of the, How are we going to set ourselves different?
Right.
You know, there's Presby, there's Baylor, there's all these places you can choose from.
And,
And the way to do it is to be a little more boutique, to offer that, you know, one-stop community shop that you can come in easily and have more personable, quick service. And so I want to get back to providing the basics, getting back to the basics and doing that really well. And it's going to happen. It's special. Just in the first month, we've already made a lot of changes.
Nice.
And, I understand the community was afraid because of all the changes. When change can be scary, you've seen it go through some different ownerships, some different names. There was fear for a while that it was going to close, and it's not going to happen. It's really the mission from corporate all the way down is to offer, you know, what we can to the community based on what we have. Find the community's needs. Yeah. What does this community need? And be able to offer that really well.
And meet it.
And for this, you know, the crazy special stuff, we have partners we can get you to. We're going to be back to that community special hospital that people are proud of.
Love it.
Wow. Except for when you stick something up your rear. You're in good hands. Hey,
not
okay.
Everyone does that.
Okay. So really? Okay. So let's talk just real quick about, and this will be my last thing. Camille.
Okay.
Doc in a box versus, now what I mean by doc in a box, just so everyone's clear, you know, there's a ton of them out there right now. You're driving along and you see emergency, you know, no wait, and you just want to pull right into the ER. It's not a hospital. It's just on the corner somewhere. There's a lot of them. I'm not going to name them. We all know who they are, right?
Yeah, they're all over.
They're all over. What's the difference? Because they advertise that it's everything that you need there. Without the weight.
It's a loaded question, man. And we could probably do a whole segment on it. And
we might just do that.
And I have to balance the response based on, you know, that there are freestanding emergency departments in this area. And I don't want to alienate them.
No, I
want to be able
stuff.
To partner with them if they need to send somebody for a heart attack or to have their appendix out. But that speaks to it right there. You know, a lot of patients, it's being more clear on what they really are and what they offer.
Okay.
So, if you have to have a blood transfusion because you bled out somewhere, you're going to have to go, they're going to have to send you to a hospital. If you have to have surgery, it's not happening in that, you know, emergency room. A heart attack's going to have to be sent out. Stroke.
Even emergency surgeries, well, they got to do something.
No,
right,
there's no
there.
Operating rooms in there. A lot of them end up calling 911 because an emergency comes in and, you know, it's not something that can be handled in that emergency center. I think it should be rebranded as an intermediate care center because, you know, it offers way more than an urgent care. It is convenient. You can get advanced diagnostics, but the end result of a lot of care has to be done in a hospital. The other thing is people get confused because of the convenience and because they look nice, they think it's an urgent care and they'll go for a sore throat or a cough and end up getting, you know, a bill for thousands of dollars, you know, when that urgent care visit would have been $175. These freestanding ERs, you're getting billed as if one, you are at a hospital and then two, as in a hospital emergency room,
even though you may have to be transferred to a real hospital.
Yeah. And you know that, so it's called a facility fee. So you're getting billed as if you were in a hospital. And if you go in for an urgent care complaint, which is 95% of what goes into these, then you're getting a much larger bill than a lot of them expect. Now, I've worked at them. They do serve a purpose. You know, it's great for a kidney stone, you know, something like that. You don't know what you have. It is good for faster, maybe faster service. I will put my ERs up against them as far as speed any day. I think average, you know, time for a patient being seen in the ER since we took over is 15 minutes, which is really fast. So, but there are conveniences to it. And there's a lot of, if you have the money and you're okay with the price and knowing you might have to be transferred, it's totally fine. I just feel bad for the unsuspecting patient that did not know, you know, that what was going to happen or the bill that was coming to them.
I see what you're saying. And you know what? Honestly, that makes a lot of sense. He's basically saying, look, they need to do a better job of setting expectations because it's not like a bad service. No. It's just how they communicate it, which me being in communications is a big deal. And setting up expectations.
And these are the private ones. There's been a trend in the last few years where hospitals will have their own freestanding emergency center.
Okay.
And those, you know, those, at least you have somewhere to transfer them to. You're part of the system.
Yep.
The other thing, you know, we talked about insurance at the beginning of the podcast. And in a true hospital emergency room where you see Medicare, Medicaid patients, you have to see everybody independent of their ability to pay.
Right.
At the private freestandings, they don't because they're not government. You know, they don't receive any money from the government. They don't have to accept, they don't accept Medicare and Medicaid.
They're pure for profit.
Pure for profit. So when you come in, they assess you for a life-threatening emergency. And if you aren't actively dying, the next thing is, do you have insurance?
Right.
And so, where we can't turn you away at a hospital, they can turn business away based on their ability to pay.
Okay, wow. I mean, that's
information to know.
I think it's not a matter of if, but when you're going to have to go in to do something, right? Or your kid or whatever. And I think my experience for Doc in the Box, they've been okay for the most part. I would say 80% of the time.
Well, that's Doc in the Box is more urgent care, like cold, sore throat, that type of thing. Yeah, that they're perfect for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's just about utilizing the resources and know what the resources are. You know, the problem is a lot of people think they're going into a Doc in the Box and it's really an quote-unquote ER.
Right.
So you're getting that big ER bill.
Right. Yeah. Gotcha. Man. David, thank you. Seriously. Yeah. And guys, I know it sounds like a hard sale, and it is probably because, you know, we want people to go to the hospital for the right reasons. And and if you're going to go and you need a place to go, go over there.
Yeah.
And this is not, you guys aren't paying us or anything to do this, but I just think someone with your personality and I don't know. You just get a good feeling, right?
No, and I'll do something different. I'll give everybody my personal cell phone number. And that's the thing, is that we want to be that accessible.
Man.
So if you feel like you had a bad experience or you need to be seen and you're nervous if you should go, we're developing a concierge line for that right now. But for now, if you want to give us a shot, call me or text me. My number is 972-786-3602. And, we just care about being able to make this a community hospital again. So it's not going to be perfect from day one, but I think every day you're going to see an improvement. And I think we're going to be back to that, doctor's hospital vibe from a while ago.
I told you.
He's changed me. I'm going there.
I told you at the break, a doctor, because I've had it happen both ways, that will give you their cell number. Like, for me, they won my loyalty because that's huge, right? I don't want to go to emergency. If I have just a quick question, hey, this is happening, should I pop in the emergency room, right?
And the problem is you call a hospital and they're trained. Every hospital, every employee, a secretary is trained. And they can't. We can't give medical advice over the phone.
Right.
I wish
they
could. Right. So I'll give you the medical advice.
That's awesome.
I love this.
Man. David, thank you.
Yeah,
you need
absolutely.
To buy the man
thank
a
you guys.
Beer if you drink beer or something. something. Glass of wine. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show. We're going to have you on. We have some really cool things coming up. And, we're certainly excited to get some things going with you and just to help the community, be healthier. Just live a healthy lifestyle. So, you don't have to go in there often.
Yeah.
But if you do...
Let's talk about prevention and what you can do to prevent having to end up in the ER.
What a dang concept, right?
I
mean, geez.
Yeah.
All right. Well, David, thank you again.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you guys.
You can go to the website in general and just to find out more about them and, look up David. How do you spell your last name?
D as in David, A-R-R-I, G as in go, A, N as in no.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. Yep.
So Puerto Rican Irish. It's a Puerto Rican name. I'm a little bit Irish. That's where it came from.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Wow. There you go. Yeah. All right, Camille, for this week, that's all I got. What in East Dallas is going on?
I don't know. Stick around. We'll find out.
See you guys.